We've been going through the journey of Naomi over the last couple of weeks, and we're going to continue to do that. Today, we're actually going to be in there. You guys look like you need a little smile, a little laughter this morning. Do you need some? Do you need some memes of the week? Let's see if we can get this going up there. Are we good? Maybe. Okay. All right. So here we go. Just for this week, we have a few memes and things. And this first one is simply this. It's a little bit late on this one, but this lady said, "My favorite summer game is to play." Was that a cicada or a rattlesnake? Texas edition. See, there you go. Yeah, you hear that rattle and you don't know which it is, do you? This one may be a little bit hard to see, but you know those little, well, here you go. We'll just put it up there. It says, "Free spicy pumpkins. Try one." It's little peppers look like little pumpkins, you know. So if you find some of those, you can hand those out for trick-or-treating this year. Okay, maybe that's not a good plan. That's not a good plan at all. This one was one that I wish I had found early on in the, it doesn't so much apply now, but it says, you know, guess, no toilet paper? Guess the roll was called up yonder. So there you go. There's an old hymn joke right there for you. Let's see, three others. Today, right now, marks 5 years that we've been in 2020. That is so true, isn't it? You know, we mentioned time changes next week, but this meme is what we're all thinking. I'm not turning my clock back an hour on November 1st because seriously, none of us need an extra hour of 2020. Now, this last one has nothing to do with this day and age we're in, but it's one of my favorite memes ever, and I've been holding on to it, so I just need to put it up there. It's just fun. This is just the best firefighter name. We have a retired firefighter name here. Look at this. I want you to see this here. We are going to get it there. There you go. No such thing as a perfect name for a firefighter. That's Lieutenant Les McBurney. Y'all, he's a firefighter named Les McBurney. Are you out there? Are you there? Oh, come on. That's like the greatest thing ever. A firefighter named Les McBurney. Sorry, just wait. Oh, I get it. There we go. See? That's pretty good. All right, but let's go back to the life of Naomi here as we've been kind of dealing with her a little bit. You know, where we were at, starting in verse 18 of verse 19 of chapter 1. But where we're at is Naomi was married to a guy named Elimelech, and he took his family, took his two sons. There was a famine in Bethlehem. They're well known in Bethlehem. People were familiar with them. They see this. They were well known, well liked in the community. They go away, and for 10 years they've been in Moab because there wasn't a famine there. They were hungry, and they thought they could go about all this. But you see that Orpah goes back, and now they're heading back to Bethlehem, back to Naomi's hometown, and it's just the two of them, Naomi and Ruth. From Bethlehem to about the borders of Moab, it's about 50 miles, you know. So I don't know how far in Moab they actually lived, but, you know, this isn't just a hop in your car and drive 50 miles. This is, they're carrying their possessions. They're moving their entire life. They're walking it. Two heartbroken widows carrying their entire life with them as they go to Bethlehem. I kind of wonder, what do you think they talked about? You know, I kind of wonder what that conversation was. It was at least several days of a journey for them, most likely. And as they're walking, I wonder if Ruth is asking questions to Naomi, like, okay, what's home like? What does it look like there? I mean, you know, where are we going to live? What are we going to do? I don't know what this 50-mile plus journey looked like. Well, let's pick up because I want you to see what happens when they get there. So verse 19, well, actually, let me go back to verse 18 here. It says, when Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped talking to her. I bet that wasn't the whole 50 miles. You know, I bet it wasn't 50 miles of silence. But the whole idea was that Ruth is just so determined to be there with Naomi. And Naomi has tried everything she could to get Ruth to just leave. Go back to your own family. Let me go. Just go. And Ruth is just determined not to. So now, verse 19 says, with the two of them traveled until they came to Bethlehem. When they entered Bethlehem, the whole town was excited about their arrival, and the local women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi," she answered, "for the Almighty has made me very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has opposed me and the Almighty has afflicted me? So Naomi came back from the territory of Moab with her daughter-in-law Ruth, the Moabitess. They arrived in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. You know, she's been away for 10 years. And when they get there, I have a feeling that Naomi just wants to kind of slip into town without anybody noticing. You know, she doesn't want to talk to anybody. She doesn't want to deal with anybody. I think she just wants to just be a fly on the wall that nobody pays attention to. But that's not what happens, is it? The entire town, her arrival, hers and her daughter-in-law's arrival. The entire town is talking about it. The entire town is paying attention to this, which is probably far from what Naomi actually wanted. And what's fascinating here is that you see this Naomi. You know, the words is it's almost this idea of surprise, this idea of bewilderment. She has been gone for 10 years. That's a long time, y'all. I mean, it really is. I saw some friends yesterday that I haven't seen in 20 years, but I still recognized them. I mean, I haven't seen these people in, well, it's probably been over 20 years, I guess. And I still recognized them. I went, oh, hey, it's good, you know. Now here, 10 years later, the people, the friends that Naomi had that are back there in Bethlehem are going, wait a minute, is this Naomi? Is this really you? You know, they're wondering how she could look so different than she did 10 years ago. Excuse me. She's older. She's probably a little bit grayer. You know, that happens to us, right? It's not a bad thing. But I have a feeling that it's probably more than that. She's just so beat up in bitterness and in stress and in the things of life that has just beat her up. She's probably stooped over a little bit. She walks a little bit slower. There's something about the way that she is now that people go, wait a minute, is this really her? Could this really be her? Because this doesn't seem like the Naomi we remember. This doesn't seem like the Naomi we love. Is this really her? You know, last week as we looked at the three ladies' stories, we see Naomi be like the epitome of logic here. She is just flat out telling the daughters, here's why you shouldn't go, and it's very logical. And this lady, who just a few days before was so logical, here erupts an emotion. When people start going, is this Naomi? Did you catch what she said? Notice what her perspective is. She says, don't call me Naomi. From the very start, she goes, don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara. Naomi actually means pleasant. That's what that word actually means. Mara means bitter. So from the start, but is that you, Naomi? She goes, don't call me Naomi. You call me bitter. She goes, don't you call me pleasant. I want to be known as bitter. Do you kind of catch that? Is that kind of a sad? You know, someone who defines themselves by their bitterness? We all do, right? Sometimes we're that person. We all have those moments where we try and define ourselves by our circumstances. We try and define ourselves by all the things that seem to be going wrong. And so she erupts in this emotion. She's like, don't call me that. She erupts, and let's back up here for a minute. We're not quite there. Go back to the verse for me, please. Can we hit the left arrow button? Because I want you to see this response. She goes, for the Almighty has made me very bitter. Notice this. She's saying, I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi? Right? Do you kind of catch the emotion that's just dripping in these words? Do you kind of catch the incredible stuff that she's struggling with, that she's going with? So she lays out four things, four charges. Let's go ahead and see these. I want you to see this. She goes, don't call me Naomi. Don't call me pleasant. Call me bitter instead, because God has made me very bitter. That was the first charge she made, doesn't it? God has made me bitter. Don't you love that phrase? This to me, right? She says, I'm empty, which the implication there being that she's empty because that really mattered. That God, and it's God's fault, right? She actually opposes me. She says that God has afflicted me, right? Not just opposes me, but has been active in going after me, has afflicted me. Right? It's a pretty rough list of things, isn't it? Honestly, I think three of those are wrong and one of them's right. I think she's 25% right. I think she's batting 1 for 4 here. I really think she is. I don't think God has made her bitter. I don't think she's as empty as she really thinks she is. And we're going to talk And I don't think God is opposing her, but I think God has let her be afflicted, that has happened. I really think that's where she's at. And so what happens here is her perspective on God has twisted so, so much. Her perspective on who God is twisted to the point where she goes, he's the guy that has made me bitter and angry and hurt. He's the guy that has made me lose everything that really mattered. He's the guy that has emptied me. He is the guy that is oppressing me. He is the guy that has affected me. You look at this, her perception is she sees God as just the judge who's just there to bring further humiliation of all this that he's brought on her. So she comes back as this bitter woman with a very poor view of God, and her expectations of God are just rock bottom, aren't they? Kind of sad, isn't it? I love the way that John Piper said it, because he's talking about how Naomi's faith has been shaken, but he mentions Naomi knows for sure. And this is what Piper said. He said, first of all, she knows that God exists, that God is sovereign, and that God has afflicted her. These are the three things that she knows, and I kind of agree with Piper. I think this is dead on. That God exists, God is sovereign, and that God has afflicted her. Notice she's not doubting God at all. She still believes in God. She just doesn't believe in God the way she wants to, the way she used to. She doesn't believe in this loving God that has taken everything away from her. But notice this God is sovereign thing. Twice in verse 20 and 21, she uses the term, you've probably translated it, the Almighty. She uses the term El Shaddai. You know what that means? The all-powerful one. Twice she uses that term for God, the all-powerful one, El Shaddai, the one who can do anything, the one that has all the power, the one that is sovereign. She uses that word twice. So you've got this pretty sad state of affairs that she goes, this perspective that she has is that all the bitterness, the emptiness, the affliction, the tragedy of her life were all due to El Shaddai, the all-powerful one. You know, it's kind of a sad way to live, isn't it? But honestly, how many times do our circumstances dictate the way we view life? Pretty often, doesn't it? It's pretty common that the circumstances and the things we're going through tend to be the thing that color how we view everything else. But there is a problem with that. And as part of all that, I think it's pretty amazing to think about just everything that she has been through and everything that she is going through. She feels empty. She feels alone. She feels like nothing is really there. I have a little video that I want to show you. I actually showed this video 3.5 years ago, so some of you may remember this video, but I think it's highly appropriate to show it at this point. So let's watch this video. I want you to see this.
This is an awareness test. How many passes does the team in white make?
Go!
The answer is 13. But did you see the moonwalking bear?
No!
Yeah, watch it again now. Pay attention. Don't pay attention to the guys in white. Watch what's going on all around him. Here he is. Isn't that crazy, y'all? We get so focused on the fact that these four people in white are tossed around a basketball. We see them pass the ball 13 times. Be honest, how many of you were counting? And when they said 13, you're like, yes, I got it. Anyone do that? Yeah, it was me. And then the first time I watched that and they said, but did you see the moonwalking bear? I went, nuh-uh. And then, you know, they rewound the tape and all that kind of stuff and showed it. I still didn't believe it. So I went back to the original video and reloaded it from the start and watched it from the start because I thought, oh, they added that part in there. Nope. He was there the entire time. You know, I show that video because this is just such a important thing about what we focus on. Guys, the things that we focus on dictate the way we live our lives. The things that we focus on dictate the way we view ourselves. They dictate the way we view God. Now, Naomi is sitting here going, look, I am empty. But is she really all that empty? I mean, honestly, I think she feels empty, But the truth is, she's coming back with some pretty significant assets that she doesn't even think about. Her perspective has her focused on all the bad things that have happened, that she's missing out on some very important things. And I want to focus on some of those things, because here's what her perspective is missing. One of those things is that she's still alive. From the very start, she is still alive. As funny as that sounds, this is all about perspective. Over the past 10 years, probably over the last just few years, it's probably not even 10 years, she has stood by three graves. She first buried her husband, then she buried her two sons, and that has got to be heartbreaking, and that has got to be tough. But rather than that show her just how precious life is, rather than that reinforce to her, man, life is important, life is precious, and you've got to make the most of it, instead it pushes her the other way to go, oh, it's just... She has missed out on this blessing that life is this precious gift from God, and she's taking it for granted. I love the way Warren Wiersbe said it. He said, because Naomi left three graves back in Moab, but God in his goodness had kept her alive and brought her back to Bethlehem. John Henry Newman said, "Fear not that your life should come to an end, but rather that it should never have a beginning." Naomi thought that life had ended for her, but her trials were really a new beginning. Naomi's faith and hope were dying, but God had other plans for her. But yet she can't see that, because her perspective is so caught up in God has made me bitter. God has taken away everything that mattered to me. He has opposed me. He has afflicted me. That she forgets that life is just a gift. Not only that, she has a very significant thing here. She doesn't, remember we talked last week about how she doesn't want her daughters to live in poverty and live there. So, but we actually see over in Ruth chapter 4 verse 3 that she has a piece of land that she's going to sell for some money, for some income. You know, she still has this piece of land. She forgets that. She still has her friends as well too. Now imagine this. 10 years later, she shows back up and all of her friends are like, "Is this Naomi? This is her. This is amazing. This is awesome." But rather than embrace those friendships, what does she want to do? She wants to pull back. She's surrounded by these people that want the very best for her, and she has this incredible support system, but she's missing it. She doesn't even see that it's actually there. At first, the sorrow and bitterness that she has is going to isolate her from everyone, and gradually you're going to see that change over the next few weeks. Instead of sitting back just staring at a wall and just gloomily just forgetting about everything, she's beginning to look outside the window. She's going to get up. She's going to walk outside the door. It's just one of these fascinating things that she's going to realize that there's so much more going on than she can see right at that moment. You know, depression's a very real thing, isn't it? And Naomi, in her depression, just cannot see any hope. She can't see anything. Maybe she had just taken time and listened to some of these friends that loved her. Maybe that would have changed. This phrase has always stuck with me. And this is kind of the way I live my life. When they talk about when you get down, this phrase I heard was, sometime when you're down, you need to go outside and look up. Y'all, I love to go out and look at the stars. I cannot go out on a moonless night and stare up at the stars, and it doesn't change the way I view myself, and it doesn't change the way I view God. My favorite verse is Psalm 19:1 that talks about the heavens declare the glory of God, the sky works of his hands. It says, day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they display knowledge. This is what I have to do sometimes when life just seems to be so much and all you could see are all these problems. I've got to focus on something else. And then one of the most sad things that she's missing here is Ruth. I want you to picture this. Picture yourself as Ruth here for a minute. She's the title character of the book, and for good reason. She is amazing. She's incredible, y'all. But imagine you're Ruth, who has just told this, your mother-in-law right here, that goes, "No, I am not going to return to my family. I am with you forever. Your people, they're my people. Your God, he's my God. I am attached to you forever. I am going to stay. Even after you die, I'm going to be there so that they can bury me beside you." Now imagine you've got that kind of commitment to Naomi, and then she goes, "I'm empty. I don't have anything in me." I almost picture Ruth on the sidelines going, "Dude, me, what? Come on. I'm right here with you," right? It probably made her feel like she's more, it probably made her feel like she's less than zero, truly. Because Naomi is going, "I am so empty," and Ruth's going, I'm trying everything I can to for you to know I'm right here with you. But she's missing it because she's so caught up in her own bitterness and in her own anger and in all of that. I love that Naomi's response is, you know, God's out to get me, right? That's what she thinks. God is out to get me. But did you catch what Ruth's response was? We talked about it last week. She's like, come on, let's go together. Your God will be my God. And she's missing all of this. But the saddest part of what she's really missing is God. This skewed perspective has caused her to miss the way Jehovah is working in her life, the way that God is right there for her. And she's in danger of missing out on that because she's so caught up in the circumstances, right? You kind of catch that picture? I love what Psalm 9:10 actually says. It says, those who know your name trust in you because you have not abandoned those who seek you, Lord. You kind of catch that? I love that verse. It says, those who know your name trust in you because you have not abandoned those who seek you, Lord. But Naomi stopped seeking God, didn't she? She stopped seeking him because she goes, no, God's just done all this mean stuff to me. So God has abandoned me and God has just given up on me. She's living the exact opposite of Psalm 9:10 here. I remember a couple of years ago about and I don't know if this story's true or not, but it's about a missionary that he had spent his entire life on the mission field. And they come back it's back in the days of ships. There weren't airplanes and all that kind of stuff. And so he takes the long journey back home and he's there with his wife and they get off of the ship and there's this huge crowd there to meet him. Turns out they were there to meet a politician and not him, you know, but supposedly he's there and he's bitter and he's just going, and he has this little conversation with God and he goes, Lord, I have sacrificed my life for you. I've committed myself to your service. And now that I'm here, no one cares. And now that I'm here, I'm all alone. Now that I'm home, no one notices. But the guy says that night, God got hold of him and said, listen, you're not home yet, right? Because I want you to take this perspective that we need to change. Because God tells this missionary, look, my child, you're not home yet. You're going, when I got home, no one cares. You're not there yet. I promise you, people do care. But Naomi's perspective is missing out on this bigger picture that God has in store for her. She's missing out on this bigger picture of what God wants to do in her life. Because she's so focused on this and this and this and this, instead of focused on this. Instead of focused on Ruth, instead of focused on the support system she has, instead of focusing on the fact that, look, she does have land, she does have a way to have a little bit of income at least, that she still has life itself, it's this gift, and she's missing all of it. And you know what? I think I miss those things in my life sometimes too. And I think that you do as well sometimes. We get so focused on all the things that aren't going the way we want them to that we end up being bitter. We end up being angry. We end up going, look, this isn't the way it's supposed to be. And rather than deal with that, step out on that thought right there that this isn't supposed to be this way. Right? This is Naomi where she's at. Praise God, she's not going to be there forever. Y'all, at this point, we're all tired of Naomi, aren't we? We're like, okay, it's 3 weeks of Naomi. Can we go on to the good part of her life? Because she's killing me, y'all. She's killing me, right? Some of you are thinking that. I know you've sat here for 3 weeks and been, it's surely not going to stay this way forever. And it's not. It's really not. But there are some real lessons, I think, as we've taken 3 weeks to go through her story here, this part of her journey through chapter one. But I think there's some real lessons that I think we need to learn from that. Some lessons we need to learn from her life. And the first one is just simply this, that choices have consequences, right? We talked a couple of weeks ago about how the choices that she had made were not good ones. She had run from God. And truly, I think that she has reached a point. I think a lot of this emotional outburst that she has at her friends, who goes, this Naomi, and she just blows up at him. I think a lot of that is she's confessing. I think she is truly going, you know what? We shouldn't have ever gone in the first place. And now I'm having to deal with the consequences of that. Guys, your choices have consequences. They really do. And it's not just the way that you live your life. I want you to understand this. Francis Schaeffer wrote a lot about this idea that your thoughts have consequences. Think about that. Not just your choices have consequences. Thoughts have consequences. The things that you think have a very real impact on you. The things that you choose to think about have a very real impact on the way you view this world. The things that you choose to dwell on and the things that you choose to think about have a very real effect on the way you view God. Thoughts have consequences. Some of us need to change the way we think. We need to change what we're focusing on. We need to focus on whatever is good and right and lovely and truthful and trustworthy, all of those things. You can read more in Philippians 4 about all of that. Some of us need to change that perspective because choices truly have consequences here. And what's fascinating here is even in Naomi's journey, we see that it has consequences even in her physical appearance. Truly, the way that she carries herself, people are seeing the difference that her viewpoint is made towards her. And they go, that can't be Naomi. That can't be her. Depression affects you physically. Grief affects you physically. It does. She's a walking and talking example of this. It's important that we choose wise things to do. It's important that, even more important than we choose wise things to think. It's important that we let God be a part of our thought process and the way we interact with everything we see this week. Because your choices and your thoughts truly do have consequences here. But this one, the second little lesson here is such a huge thing because we misunderstand God's plan when we interpret His love for us by our circumstances. I want you to think about this here for a minute. Naomi has no qualms at all about saying that God exists. If you were to ask Naomi in this moment, does God love you? How would you think she's going to respond? Nope. Maybe she'd do it a little more eloquently than just go, nope. But I truly think she goes, God doesn't love me. Why? Because she is interpreting God's love based on all of her circumstances, based on everything that is happening to her. So many times you and I get it backwards as well, too. Isn't this backwards? Shouldn't we be interpreting our circumstances based upon God's love rather than the other way around? Yet we look at how things are going in our life and we go, this is about if God cares for us or not. When really we need to be looking at everything we're going through and go, well, we can handle this because God cares for us, because God is going to be there with us. This is an important lesson that we need to learn from the life of Naomi, because we so often misunderstand what God wants to do in our life because we tie His love for us to the things that we are going through. But I want to remind you, you're not home yet, okay? You're not home yet. Keep on. Even when it's tough, even when it's difficult, stick with it. You've got to be a part of staying close to whatever God is doing in your life, no matter even if things are going your way or if they're not. So this is the third lesson. Trust the Lord even when life doesn't seem fair. Because honestly, I think she is just so bitter. She's so angry. She's so struggling with everything she's gone through. If you were to ask her, is this fair? She'd be like, absolutely not. But her response should be, but I'm going to trust God anyway. God's going to get me through this and He can help me through this. Now, your perspective changes the way you live your life. And sometimes your perspective needs to change. Rather than look at the circumstances and everything you're going through, focus on the God who loves you so much and He wants to be there for you. Some of us need a perspective change and we need to see all those things that we're missing. There's a lot going on in our lives that we miss because we're so busy caught up with the way things aren't going, right? We're so busy caught up with, I want it to be this way, but it's not, so I'm just going to focus there. Naomi had gotten one thing absolutely right. That God is sovereign, that He is the Almighty, that He is the all-powerful God. I think she got that right, absolutely. But her view of that was skewed, because all she saw was God's power without His pity. She sees God's sovereignty, but no real care or sympathy or concern, right? She sees justice without any kind of grace. She sees herself as this bullseye at the center of God's target here. Her view of God is very much skewed. And when tough times come, our view of God is skewed. I think just about every sin in the world comes from one of two things. Either our view of God is skewed or our view of ourselves is skewed. All the bad decisions we make can go back to one of those that we view wrong. Either we're viewing God wrong or we're viewing who we are wrong. It is so important that we let God set our perspective, that we let God be the thing that determines our course, that God is the way we define ourselves. And I love this majestic sovereignty of God that's on display, because you have this little transition that closes the chapter in verse 22 that talks about when they arrived in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. Thing that's going to frame everything else that we're about to go through, everything else we're about to see. God actually is at work behind the scenes, even though she's not seeing it. In 85 verses, there's only 85 verses in the entire book of Ruth. God is mentioned, I think, 25 times in those 85 verses. He is at work behind the scenes every step of the way. But all she can see is that he opposes me, he hates me, he's against me. But she's going to find that that's not true at all. That he's at work in a way that she could have never imagined. And we're going to pick it up there next week. So let's have a word of prayer. Father, we thank you for this incredible example we have of Naomi. It's a credible example we have of someone who understands what it's like to hurt, someone that understands what it's like to go through pain, someone who understands what it's like to go, I wish it wasn't. She is just so much like us. And I find myself to be so much like her. So Father, as we go through this week, I hope that we don't play the blame game with you, that we don't go, all the bad things in our life are because of you. I pray that you'll give us a different perspective as we go through this week. That we're going to see things through your eyes. We're going to see the good. We're going to see the bad. And the one thing that we're going to see is that you are God over all of it. You're there in the midst of our hard times. You're there in the midst of our good times. Just like it says in Ecclesiastes 7:14, that you've created both of them so that no man can know his future, so that we don't know what's going on, so that we will put our trust and our faith in you. Help us to do that this week. It's in your name we pray. Amen.